If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns. And today on the show, we're pulling back the curtain on reality TV and how it all works. I have another producer of reality TV on the show today, or should I say a former producer. She goes by @itsliveonair on TikTok. She's been having a lot of videos go viral on the platform of her just talking about the behind the scenes of reality TV. And it's not really like salacious gossip or like piping hot tea. It's really more about like the mechanics and how things are filmed and how the producer talent relationship unfolds, you know, just various things that I think that, you know, maybe the casual reality TV viewer doesn't always think about, but I feel like a lot of people listening to this show think about reality TV in a slightly more elevated way. So I think you'll really find this interesting. And you know that, you know, we're watching TV shows, you know, so I don't think it will like, it doesn't like puncture the sort of fantasy of reality TV. I think it just sort of will make you maybe a more informed viewer. Because I know that I learned a lot, so I know that you guys will learn a lot as well. So when I reach out to It's Liv, again, I just want to ask her a bunch of questions that I have that maybe were sparked by videos that she's already posted or things that I've always sort of wondered about. She's never worked on a Bravo show, from what I understand, so it's not directly about Bravo, but she watches a lot of Bravo. And obviously, being a former reality TV producer, the way that she watches reality TV is very different from the rest of us. And so she has a lot of opinions and sort of theories about, you know, in particular, like the last season of Vanderpump Rules, like how some of that unfolded and sort of what went into some of those kind of, especially the finale, some of the arguments in the finale. So I think you'll really enjoy this conversation today. And I would love to have Liv back on the show to answer some of my outstanding questions and maybe get to some of the things that, if you're listening to this conversation that we have, if you find that I didn't ask a question that you wanted an answer to, or maybe a portion of our chat sparked something in you that you are all of a sudden wondering about, shoot me a DM on @GabbingWithGib or @GibSonoma. Maybe I'll also put up a question box on the Instagram stories on Tuesday, the day this episode comes out, just to collect some of those questions, because I'd love to have Liv back on later this fall to sort of continue the conversation. I really found it fascinating. So keep listening for my chat about the behind the scenes of reality TV with @itsliveonair. Check out her podcast, It's Liv On Air, your behind-the-scenes bestie, wherever you get your podcast. She's rewatching Unreal. She's unpacking reality shows. She's answering listener questions, doing all the things. If you love this episode, you'll love her podcast. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll see you later this week. I want to gab. All right. Today we're gabbing with It's Liv On Air. She is honestly an incredible, incredible TikTok follow. I started to see her videos pop up a lot because she was sharing some really kind of tricks of the trade, behind the scenes tidbits about how reality TV really works. And some of it confirms what you think. Some of it is totally not what you think. And Liv just started a podcast recently. And so it felt like the perfect time to have her on to really kind of pick her brain about her experience in reality TV as a producer and just hear some behind the scenes tea. So Liv, thanks so much for being on. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I also love your hat. I feel like you're really,
you're
bringing the vibes. We're ready to gab today.
Yeah, I want to gab. I'm wearing my merch. So, okay. You used to work in reality TV, not anymore, correct? Like you're completely disconnected from it now?
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's been part of what's been so freeing for me and what I think has helped me be able to release content that's a little more on the edge. Because I think a lot, when you're still in the industry, you want to be able to still be hired for it. And I think probably someone wouldn't want to hire me anymore knowing that I'm just going to go blab about it on TikTok, which is totally fair. So yeah, I'm out of the industry, recovered ex, but I work in a very adjacent, I work in creative production. So I make a lot of ads and branded content and do develop reality shows and are trying to sell them. So
awesome.
Adjacent, yeah.
Adjacent, but just not in the field.
Yeah, not in the field.
How long were you in that line of work?
Gosh, 20, like 7 years.
Okay. Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Talk to us about some of the shows that you worked on and how many sort of different projects you were on.
Yeah, I mean, in reality shows happen very fast, which is part of the reason why they're also so successful. You know, a scripted series can shoot for a year, whereas, you know, you're in the field for 6 weeks on a reality show and you're in and out. So
wow.
You're maybe prepping for a few weeks and then you're shooting. They used to shoot for longer when they had larger budgets, but now they really consolidate them. Gosh, probably at least 20, 30 shows over that time. But yeah, I'd say most gigs were like 12 weeks probably. And I worked pretty regularly. So
can you name some of them or are you not?
Of course. Okay. I started on a lot of smaller reality shows. So like small docu-follow, like ensemble cast. So I did Little Women LA. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have seen some clips. I've never seen full seasons, but...
Yeah, there's
I feel like I'm more familiar with Little Women Atlanta.
Yes, because Atlanta had a very viral cast.
Yes.
But I worked on small docu-follow shows that came from a smaller production company, and then I transitioned into bigger stage shows. So I did like Dancing with the Stars, World of Dance, larger shows like that, which were very fun, very different. All good learning experiences,
yeah,
I will say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so getting into sort of some of the stuff that you have posted online, kind of about your experience, is there something that sort of hit that you're like, oh, people like really care about this thing, or like they really are curious about this aspect of how it all works?
Yeah. So much more than I ever thought it would, because it's your day-to-day when you're producing, you know, is you're like, oh, you have to put a walkie in the car because we need to follow them and we need to be able to tell them that they have to stop or turn right here or pull over. Like, just these things that seem so normal to me. People are like, oh my God, I always wondered how they filmed the car scene. And do they just, you know, throw them in the car, just drive around and go to the location? It's like, no, a lot of the times you're like doing laps in a neighborhood and you're pulling over to adjust mics and, you know, swap out the batteries and checking the camera angles. Like, so it just, people not understanding that and having it resonate so well was such a funny experience for me, because I was literally just on my couch like that. And that's how I watch TV. Like, when I watch the show, I'm thinking about, where's the camera placement in this show? How do they film this? How many days have they filmed this over? Is this out of order? Is this one of the storylines that they're really making up for the show? Is this genuine? Like, that's how my brain's always working. Mm-hmm. So to have that resonate, that has been really fun to chat about that.
But yeah, it's funny because I'll like be watching your videos and I'm like, it's the same thing where I'm really, some sort of really minor, seemingly minor thing that you reveal. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my God, like that is... I really haven't thought about it that way or whatever. And it's not like the biggest tea, but it is.
Yeah.
It's funny because I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle, because some people watch reality TV and they take everything at face value. They
totally.
And that's probably like the ideal viewer in a lot of ways, right?
Totally.
They're not going to question anything and they don't care how it's produced. They don't think about that. This is their real life completely. And then there's some people, I think maybe I'm on the other side of the spectrum, where I'm like, I'm not necessarily questioning things necessarily, but I am thinking, I think about a lot of it. I think about, I don't know if you know who Brian Moylan is. He writes for Vulture and he wrote a big book about Real Housewives and how that all works. And he talks about how like every fight is about the show. And I just think about how like everything is really about like the show and keeping your job and getting the paycheck and all of that kind of stuff. I feel like there's a broad spectrum of sort of viewers in that way.
And I feel like viewers are getting so much more savvy. Like I think people are leaning more towards you and I and how they watch the show. And it's been interesting to see how shows have kind of leaned into that. Like we've seen them, you know, start to break the fourth wall and acknowledge the cameras. Like, you know, when they talk about the show outside of the show actually happening, where for so long that was such a taboo that no network would touch. And now they're, you know, like you said this on your podcast and you, the blogs, like all that stuff has been really interesting to see how different shows have dealt with that and how to acknowledge it.
Is there a specific instance of breaking the fourth wall or acknowledging that has sort of like particularly surprised you or been like, oh, like we're in this era of reality TV now? Oh,
that's a good question. I mean, I appreciate a clever fourth wall break. Like for a long time, the trend would be just to break the fourth wall and see the cameras just because. And it
right.
And it's just like, now you're just being lazy. Like you have to do it intentionally and like for a story purpose. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally. It's like, I think about on Beverly Hills at the Denise Richards Brandy season, how like Denise like stormed out of this like thing in Rome and the producer had to like chase after her and be like, Denise, come back. Or like things like that where I'm like, okay, it probably does take somebody who's a member of the crew, sort of like family, who has their ear and has like the trust, and she can really talk her into going back into that situation.
Yeah. And you often, when you go on a show, you sign like a deal memo, and that paperwork very intentionally includes an appearance release for you. So there's no going back to the producer and being like, hey, is it okay that we're showing up? You know, if you're caught on camera and they want to use it, like, it is what it is.
It's fair game. Yeah, it's similarly to the react to the stars. Similarly to the people to actual talent. It's like if you're on, it's a hot set, right? It's like
totally. You got a mic on. Pay attention.
Exactly. So, but that gets into an idea. One of your most viral videos is about how like confessionals and interviews work for these shows, and you talk a lot about how the producers who are doing that, it's a particular skill set. It's like very nuanced because you have to get them to really open up and be emotional and kind of take them back to that place. And that relies on like a rapport and a relationship that you developed with the talent between production crew and the talent. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that kind of just the different levels of that and how you're able to get to that point with some of these people?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, obviously, you're a great example of it. Like, you know, you have to come prepared to the interview. You have to do your homework ahead of time, know what you want to talk about, kind of know where you want things to go. Like, I like to think of people look at an episode and say it has to, you know, you obviously want an arc, right? You want the beginning, you want the middle, you want the emotional, you want the resolution. Like, I think the best interviewers think about interviews in the same way. You want to take them on that journey as well with you. So you want to start with the more basic stuff, get them warm up, get them comfortable so they're not thinking about the mic pack in their back or the lights or whatever. Then they're with you in the moment, and then you can kind of take them through the emotional stuff that you're kind of wanting to get out of them. And then at the end of the interview, you want them to kind of feel like, you know, I've resolved, I've said my piece on these topics that I wanted to talk about. But there's a funny line between producers and cast, I think, that can get quite tricky because I personally, you can kind of feel like you're both using each other. Like, you want to be friends with the cast, and there are casts that I have genuinely like loved and would hang out with. The ones that I love the most don't generally make good TV, which is unfortunate. But you have this relationship where like I need them to like me and trust me and want to, you know, reveal things to me and say things to me. But also on the other hand, when they're being nice to me, I'm like, I also feel like you're kind of just like
buttering me up.
You want me to like, yeah, exactly. Like you also what? There's something in this for you too. So it is a funny line to walk where you spend so much time with these people. And it's like, is this authentic to
anyone? And I guess that reflects like, it's an obviously a more apparent version of this, but like that is kind of what like a relationship with your boss might be, your relationship with like a regular coworker might be, right? And so it's like, it is like a mutually beneficial thing. Like they want a good edit. They want
exactly.
a lot of airtime, all that kind of stuff. And it's a particularly visible version of that, I would say.
Yeah. And people will, I mean, obviously people have their feelings about TV producers and will, you know, say like, you're a terrible person and you use people for blah, blah, blah. And I understand where some of that's coming from, and don't get me wrong. Like, there's absolutely producers who really cross the line and have done like some really challenging, you know, things that not great that you probably wouldn't, you know, want to write down and have read out to you in a court of law. But I think on the other hand, I kind of look at it as like sales. I'm like, when you're selling, if you're a salesperson, you're selling someone a product, like, they might not 110% need the product, but it's your job to give them the information, and then they're adults and they make the choice. And that's, if you're really good at having them make a choice, that's not your fault, you know?
Listen. Does that producer talent relationship, does it ever breed weirdness between the stars themselves? Like, is there like a jealousy component of like, oh this person's really close to this producer? And, you know, talk to me about that idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they definitely will, you know, favoritism is definitely a thing. And I was just watching the Vanderpump Rules finale.
Yes. Let's get into that.
What a capsule in time that is. Mm-hmm. But I do think a lot of that final clash where Lala's screaming about how she thinks she, you know, Ariana thinks she's Beyonce was because Ariana was getting so much favoritism from production that season. And that can result in or can manifest in a way that's pretty unfun for the rest of the cast, where it's like, you know, Ariana doesn't actually want to travel to North Hollywood, so we're going to have to scrap the scene. You're going to have to drive over here. Yeah, exactly. Or actually, like, that's off limits for Ariana, so we're going to have to think of something else to talk about in that scene. Like, and that can be really frustrating to people who are showing up to film and do their
job. And it builds up.
Exactly. So I can imagine if that was happening all season, they come to the finale, they think, finally, we're going to be done, move on, and she just stonewalls them again. I can imagine that was pretty frustrating. And I think also probably Ariana was doing a lot of stonewalling in conversations, like having someone say, oh, like, and what happened there? And she would just say, I'm not going to talk about this on camera. It's not going to happen. Mm. And that's also very frustrating for cast.
And that's like such an interesting, I mean, that whole season's so interesting. And that finale, I think, it's great that you're unpacking that, because it's like, I always thought about that episode and that whole moment as like sort of two things converging, like Sheena and Lala thinking that they're doing their jobs, and same with Sandoval, honestly, and Ariana clearly getting to a point, understandably, but getting to a point where she was like over it. She didn't want to play the game of what you know, reality TV demands of you. So, but I'm still at a place in that situation where I'm like, I get what they were trying to do, because that was their job. And I'm guessing as a producer, you probably love Ariana as a person, and like, as I do, I freaking love her. But then you also appreciate what the other side's maybe trying to do or attempting to do, even if it was a total fool's errand to try to do that with her at that point. Like, it was so obvious that like she wasn't going down that road. What's the producer point of view on that finale?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that, where and I think they probably conflated a lot of stuff that the cast had put up with in their early 20s, where it was like, yep, sure, Jax, you know, cheated on Stassi, and they all did, you know, absolutely horrible things to each other and were able to move on and continue with the show. And I think it was a mix of Ariana kind of feeling like the chapter of the show was closing anyway, and she was completely unwilling to play ball. So I fully believe that the producers of that series walked into that finale thinking, Ariana's going to play ball. She's, you know, she's not going to say, this is great, but she's going to say, we can be cordial.
How do you think that, though? How do you think that that's such wishful thinking? You know, it's like, damn, like it was so, it also reminds me of the sort of like, oh, she thinks she's Beyonce thing. And maybe this is like a frustration of a reflection of behind the scenes frustration. And Bethany Frankel recently came out, and she was like, I think she's talked about this before, but she was like, when I came back to Roni, she says, my contract was anything I wanted it to be. The days I wanted to shoot, the hours I wanted to shoot, the way I wanted to shoot, the money that I wanted to get. She had a very cushy contract. Is that, obviously Bethany is like the exhibit A example of all, like anything regarding that, but like, is that a common thing? And that must play into the on-screen dynamic and what we see on the show, but we don't obviously get to acknowledge it.
Yes, definitely. And when you have that leverage of that story, which Ariana really did in that last season, that if you want to play this out, I'm sure she got quite a favorable contract. I do think shows are moving towards like a most favored nations thing, which is they all get the same per ep, and they, like, you know, shows like Below Deck where the cast aren't as, you know, they get the same per ep, and they say that's a rule to kind of avoid these things. But I think shows on Housewives, that's not
yeah.
happening. I did see a clip, dude. I don't know if you watched Siesta Key, but Juliet.
I watched the first season.
I mean, mess. But she was talking about that they had MFN on their cast contracts, but she was narrating. So she was able to say that narration contract. She was like, I just made that be
oh,
huge
interesting.
Every time to make me come back because I couldn't really negotiate the per contract stuff, but I knew that I was the star. So
it's
I
extra
could.
Work too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, interesting.
Clever. Clever. But it does definitely play in. Like the cast is very aware of who is the favorite, who is getting the most screen time, who is most liked by production, who is bringing the storyline. They're very aware.
That has to do with what I think is maybe the most shocking fourth wall break that I've seen in a while, which is on Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, where on season two, where they talked about contract negotiations at dinner on the show. And I remember, it must have been with Jesse. I interviewed Jesse at some point, and I was like, when that was happening, did you think that was ever going to be on the show? And she was like, absolutely not. Like, that was not, like, that, we just figured that would be cut from whatever scene that would end up being. And they included it. And I was like, oh my God, I've never seen contract negotiation on a reality show before.
And did you like it?
I did. As like a viewer, I was like, oh my God, it honestly scratched the same itch that your TikToks do, where I'm like, oh my God, like, this is like,
yeah, got it.
Whoa, like, this is playing into it. This is, but I will say, as like a purveyor of reality TV, I'm like, it almost gives me pause because I'm like, that's a slippery slope in terms of like seeing that kind of stuff all the time. I think it's a good breadcrumb, but I think that like, I feel like I'm trying to think of what I usually use as an example of this, but I feel like at some point Bravo really was tearing down the fourth wall, and they maybe realized that it was like a little too much that was happening. I think it was kind of like Denise Richards Bravo Bravo fucking Bravo kind of time.
Classic.
But they have to roll that back, because I do think that, like, as you said, there are clever ways of doing it, there are lazy ways of doing it, and there are probably other ways that are just too much.
Yeah, totally. And also, like, at a certain point, like, that will get boring, right? Like, if the Mormon wives thinks that all they have to do is argue about their contracts, like, we're all going to fall asleep. Like, they need to bring other storylines. So it's a slippery slope you're playing with there.
Do you watch Real Housewives of Orange County?
I don't.
Have you heard about this season and what the drama is?
I've heard the lie detector episode is a big thing, but I haven't watched it.
It's a big thing. It's basically about just like, I'm enjoying it generally speaking, but it kind of gets into this idea of like, the entire season is about like, this person talked to this Instagram account, who talked to this journalist, who talked to this podcaster, and like, who said what to who. And like, it's one of those things where I'm like, what did production think when this was filming? Like, were they like, oh, this is giving, this is going to be like an amazing thing? Or was it kind of like a ball that was rolling down the hill too out of control? Like, I don't know. I guess you don't watch it, so it's hard to ask you about it. But like, when I say that kind of, when I describe that, what do you think? Like, is that something that like they were trying to lean into, maybe in like a Salt Lake City kind of way? Or,
I mean, Salt Lake City, what an excellent episode of TV. I think they would be scared of it if it was a recurring thing that was happening episode over episode, because when you're talking about things that aren't happening on camera, of course you can, you know, you can help tell the story, you can do pickups, you can, you know, put in the snapshot of the blog, you can make things work, but it's not what the viewers want to see repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And like, the storyline of like, you know, you said this on that podcast and then you went on Watch What Happens Live and that really pissed me off. Like, it gets hard to follow, and it's not what we're there for.
And production,
you know,
doesn't want that, right? They don't want that to actually be it, right?
No. It's not what viewers come back for. Of course, there's the one-offs where, you know, like Salt Lake City, the crazy thing happens where you're like, mm-hmm. this is fantastic. But for the most part, it's petty stuff. Like you said, like he said, she said, that can drag out forever. That's just not as exciting to watch.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed Sponsored Jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What to you is the biggest misconception about reality TV from a production standpoint in a viewer's minds?
I think people, some people genuinely think that you are picking up cameras that day and showing up at the cast member's house and saying, "What's up, guys? What are we doing today?" And it is so much more methodical than that. Like, you map the entire season before it starts. And of course, things move around and things change. And maybe that storyline doesn't play out the way you think it will. But like, you sit there and you say, this is our A story. This is our B story. This is our C story. These are the tentpole events that are going to bring the crew together. Here's what we think they're going to be. You know, it's a baby shower. It's a homecoming party. It's a blah. It's a blah. This is, and because you talk to each of the cast before the show starts. I'm sure you know this, but like, you have the preseason chat where you're like, "Hey, what's going on for you this season? What is this going? What are we going to follow? What does this look like?" Sometimes they say the dumbest stuff you've ever heard in your life, and you have to talk them out of that. And they're like, a lot of what I hear happens now is people be like, "I'm starting a insert business here," and I think it'll be really great drama to follow me trying to figure it out. And like, no,
snooze,
total snooze fest. So you have to talk them out of that. And like, actually, we don't care that you're starting a juice comp, whatever silly thing it is, and we need you to have personal stakes here, not just like an external thing happening that no one wants to talk about. So I think people would be surprised by how much craft is put into the season and the episodes before they start.
And so the follow-up question to that, I think you probably answered this question before, is like, what do you say to people who are like, "All right, so then it's scripted, all right, then it's all fake"? What do you say to that?
I think both things are true. I think it's quite rare that someone completely makes up a storyline. At the same time, I have watched cast get into huge fights on camera, and then we put the cameras down and they talk like nothing happened and kiss each other on the cheek and leave. So
wow.
It's both. And I think like you said, they know they're doing a job. They know that they have to be interesting, and so it's a little bit of both. I know a lot of reality TV producers are scared to say it's scripted, but I'm like, sometimes it is, where you're like, the sun's going down. It's the end of an all-cast event. We need an end to the episode. Nothing's happened. You guys have been boring. I need you guys to bring a fight. Sorry.
And I think that like, there's in that, to me, there is something compelling. One, you said that like, you know, you map it out, but things don't always go to according to plan, or like this probably throws a wrench in your plan. You have to kind of pivot or whatever. But also I think sort of what we talked about before in terms of like the show playing into it and the behind the scenes politics of the whole production, that's always going to show itself, I'm guessing, in like a unexpected or like hard to pin down kind of way. And so that's kind of why I like watching it with like the lens of like, yeah, this is a TV show, this is a production, but that just to me adds a layer to it, I guess. And I'm guessing, because you watch with this lens, obviously, I'm guessing for you, the most entertaining, the best shows are the ones that probably veered from that, probably like weren't the ones that were the most sort of formulaic, predictable rollouts.
Totally. And I feel like I can tell when things go off the rails. When I'm like,
what's an example of that? Tell me an example.
That is not what they were expecting. Gosh, what was I watching? I mean, the Vanderpump Rules finale is a very clear example of that, where they had set up all these conversations. They'd set up this, you know, Tom was helping Sheena. They'd set up all the right things to make it come together, and it just fell over flat.
Mm-hmm.
And an example of where I saw, do you watch The Valley?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so the Valley, where there was one episode where Jasmine just randomly went off on Janet and like called her a Karen when they'd had no lead up to the fight.
Yes.
I was like, that was
came
so
out of nowhere.
Clear. Yeah, they pulled Jasmine aside and said, "Listen, girl, we need an end to the episode. You guys have done nothing. Like, please just start a fight." And she was "Okay, here I go."
Okay. Karen tendency. Was it Karen tendencies? That was the word she used. Okay, actually, very specific question about that
season,
by the way. Janet gets a lot of flack on The Valley in general, but she got a lot of flack because her entire storyline was other people, like her basically meddling in other people's business that season. And I'm guessing that's sort of her natural way of being on camera. And like, she is a pot stirrer. She likes to kind of get the gossip and carrying around. And that's good for the show. But people were like, you know, she didn't have anything else going on. And I'm like, there probably wasn't that much else compelling going on. But I'm guessing there was a lot or a good amount of personal scenes that were filmed and just not used because they were boring, or there wasn't space for them. Is that an accurate read on that?
Absolutely. And also, I'm a Janet apologist. So just cancel me right now. Just throw me off here.
Yeah. Somebody messaged me the other day saying I'm very disappointed in you being Team Janet. I'm like, first of all, I'm not Team anybody. I just more am playing devil's advocate in that situation. Thank you very much. But continue.
She gets dragged. Yeah. And I think she is self-producing so hard. And I think that.
Yeah, she is.
Probably also leads into what you're saying is that she thinks she's bringing these authentic moments in the one-to-one scenes with her and Jason, and they're probably just landing so flat. And like, I've watched those scenes play out where you're like, God, like I want, like in theory, this should be good. Like, but they just, it just bores you to tears. And a lot of those do just end up on the cutting room floor. But she's willing to fight with other people. So to me, I'm like, you know what?
But one of them that is an example of what you're saying is the tattoo scene where they got that tattoo and you're like, this is like so not hitting. And it's probably totally emblematic of what you're saying. Like, that's probably what they were doing in their scenes at home. And it was a weird scene.
They're like, we're so in love, like flat, like no emotion. Yeah, like, let's get tattoos. And you're like, are you guys okay? I believe that you probably do really like each other. You're just not.
Right.
But you know what? I will say, Jason in the reunion, man is fighting for his spot in the next season. And I can appreciate that.
You got to appreciate it. Yeah,
I can totally appreciate that.
Staying in this world for a second.
I love this world. So let's never leave.
In the Vanderpump Rules final season.
Yes.
We're talking about how sort of weird that kind of whole thing was. And I remember around, I think when it was airing, maybe like Alex Baskin, the executive producer or one of them, did this big interview where he was talking about how midway through that season of filming, he had like a come to Jesus meeting with like a lot of the cast at the production office. And he was like, you guys got to give us more. Like, they're like, basically, like, we're going to get canceled if you don't like deliver a season, because they have been so like probably roadblocked, as you were saying. And when you're watching that season, you realize that like halfway through, that's when Lala starts to like reach out to Joe. And that's when Sheena like starts to want to film with Sandoval. And like, does that kind of thing happen often where there's sort of like the stakes were so high in that season, but I don't know, that meeting might like lives rent free in my mind. I think about it all the time.
I would also love to be a fly on the wall for the meeting.
Yes.
I've definitely been a part of one-to-one. I haven't had an all cast. You guys need to get your shit together. That's pretty intense, but definitely on a one-to-one basis. Like,
okay,
the showrunner will pull a cast aside and say, hey, this is not, you know, this is not going to go well for you if you don't do something more interesting than sit there.
Another kind of topic I want to go down is, you did a video about the Danny and Luke scene, and you know how Danny argued, where it was where Danny revealed to Luke what had been said in the boys chat, and they were sitting on the couch, and he's always argued that he didn't know they were still filming, and you argue that he's telling the truth, that he genuinely didn't think they were filming anymore. I was always like, he's full of shit, like he knew they were filming, he knows what he's talking about. But you had a lot of good reasons to explain that he probably didn't know they were still filming.
Yeah. And I believe that was done intentionally by producers. There is no world in which you would put a camera down facing the cast, seemingly unmanned, right? Like, they're very blindly, like, mind-numbingly expensive. You wouldn't put a camera on a surface that was at eye level and walk away from it.
If
you weren't trying to capture something. So my best guess, it'd probably come up while they were prepping both of them. And Danny was like, I don't want to say it. I don't think I'm going to say it. And they'd probably tried to get him to come out in the scene. He was like, I'm not going to do it. I need to think about it. Whatever. I won't talk to Nia. Whatever. A million reasons that they have for not wanting to say something on camera. And I think the producer said to the camera person, put your camera down, leave it rolling. And Luke was like, what is it that they're trying to get out of you? That's my best guess of what
happened.
That's
such tea. That's informed. I think you're right. Wow.
I have done that before, and it, you know, sometimes you know that they're holding back on you, and you're like, we have to. And sometimes you'll also see people will pull back, like the when they really say the juicy thing, you won't be on a close up on them. It'll be a really wide shot. And sometimes it can be that they forget they're being filmed. And other times it's literally just the psychological thing of not having a camera right in your face, that it's like,
yeah,
you know, you have enough in the moment with the person that you reveal whatever we're trying to get you to reveal for however long we've been trying to get you to say it.
And that's generally what hot mics are, right? It's like you forget you're still mic'd most of the time, or you're going to the bathroom.
Have you ever been mic'd?
I have been mic'd before.
Yeah. Do you feel like you could have forgotten that it was on?
If the camera is not on me, I just feel like if I had been filming a reality show for if I was in my third season or beyond, I would know better, maybe. But yeah. I guess you have three drinks and whatever. But it probably plays into the trust you have in the producers.
Totally.
And all of that. And yeah.
It is. Yeah. The hot mic thing is also I remind people that they're recorded totally independently. So I think naive cast think, if the camera's not on me, they don't have the audio, but they're completely separate machines running completely separate things. So they can.
We've all seen the general party footage with the subtitles on, from the bathroom or whatever it is. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, the hot mic thing is so bizarre because you hear I think audio people are also unsung heroes in reality.
I'm sure. You're listening, right, the whole time?
Yeah. And producers generally are too, but it's often, if you have to pull out you just need a moment without 10 people talking in your ear, the audio person always has their ears on. So they will be they just walked off and took this phone call and called their wife and there's this other thing happening and maybe, I don't know, but maybe you guys want to look into it. You hear all of the in-betweens of everything.
And that's sometimes where the gems are, right?
Yes. And it can sometimes be intimate, where you're like, well, maybe I didn't want to know that about you, but I guess.
So I remember on one of your videos, you said that they can ask for their mics to be turned off when they go to the bathroom.
Yes.
Okay. What if they're saying that to you almost as a cover and you kind of...
Then you don't.
Okay. Then you hear it.
I think most seasoned cast will be like, hey guys, I'm going to the bathroom if you want to cut my feed. And the audio person will literally and they still have it recorded, but they cut the feed that's going into producers.
They're not listening actively.
So you don't have to listen to them pee, which I appreciate 90% of the time. But if there's any doubt that you think they're being shady, and it's not something that you have to do with the cats, it's just the audio person doing something on their bag. So you can be like, no problem, we'll cut your mic. Mm-hmm. Go do what you got to do. But you're like,
right.
Cut the mic. Leave it on.
We mentioned Denise Richards saying bravo, bravo, fucking bravo. And, in her experience up until that point, that had made the footage unusable, basically. So it's if something is said or you say something that you don't want used, that has to be cut because it's calling attention to the network, and that Bravo historically didn't want to do that. Obviously, that was a turning point in some ways. What are some other, because I've heard of some other things that people do to make things unusable or to cover up, they'll tap their mic when they're saying something, or they'll try to cover their mic. Are there any other sort of tricks of the trade if you're talent?
Great question. Also, I think it's so weird that that's what she thought would make people not want to use it. When I'm like, you're literally advertising the network. I think
right. It's a catchphrase. She came up with a catchphrase.
They love that.
It's on merch, babe.
literally. Covering the mic is a good one. But again, they're very sensitive. So it's pretty, you can at least pick up a muffled thing. And also, if you're sitting across from someone who's mic'd, doesn't matter. We'll get the audio anyway. Another one is people will look at the camera. We will acknowledge the camera and look at it in the eye so that you can't. But again, the audio
it's
is
kind of
usable.
A good moment. Yeah, it's also kind of a good
So yeah, looking at the camera, I've had my favorite is when casts are really green. They'll pick up their mic and put it, and you're like, oh no, we can all hear you just fine. You don't
don't yell
no,
at
no,
me.
No. Yeah, literally, don't do that.
If they rip off a mic or something like that, that's just a good television moment, I get. I guess.
It's scary because their mics are really expensive. Their price. And that's why another good thing to watch for, if anyone ever gets pushed into a pool and they don't have a mic on, it's 100% planned and scripted. And most of the time they're...
Oh, they don't have a mic on. Right.
Yeah. Because there's a couple, I can't remember an instance, but I've seen casts come out of the pool and they're like, holy sh, my mic. That's the first thing they think of because they're so trained because... They're really expensive and they're really, really fragile. And if the wire kinks, it won't work anymore. And you get to know the audio person, and the audio person owns their kit. So you're like, I don't want to ruin, Jeff's mic kit. So when a person gets pushed into the pool and they come, is like my mic. I'm like, that's real. Every other time they walk out, I'm like,
Well, it's nope. Like, on Love Island, they basically don't use any pool scenes because they're not wearing their mics in the pool.
Yes, exactly. Right? And when they jump in the pool, you see them all rip off their mics because...
Got it.
They have been trained that they're very expensive. You can't mess with them.
I'm trying to think back to Marge Josephs pushing Danielle Staub's
man
in the pool. Because that felt pretty in the moment, but who knows? You know, I don't think he knew it was coming. She maybe
no.
did.
No. Maybe she, but like, when was the last time like adults, normal people?
Also,
like,
maybe he wasn't Mike.
Maybe. That's true. And sometimes you run out of mics and you're just booming them so you can mm-hmm. still hear it anyway. But yeah, I mean, in general, like adults pushing people in the pool, I'm like, I don't believe that you guys are just doing that out there,
right.
You know?
right. Totally. All right. So I have like a couple more like quick answer, fun facty kind of
Hit
questions.
Me.
You did one about therapy scenes. Give us a quick like kind of TLDR on those, because I think a lot of people think those are like super set up, super like phony. Talk to me about the therapy scenes.
Yeah. And a lot of people think that they're not real therapists. And I'm like, do you understand how challenging it would be to cast an... The logistics of casting someone to be a therapist is so much more challenging than it is to just call 15 therapists in LA and be like, can we bring blah, blah, blah in for a session and we'll pay you your hourly and mm-hmm. it'll be great. Okay. So therapy sessions. So you call 15 therapists. And you are generally looking for, depending on the network, I will say the look of the therapists can be important. So like...
Oh, interesting.
They might want, a younger, prettier therapist. I think like...
For Jax.
If I was booking a therapist for Jax, like I would probably go to a younger female, attractive therapist.
Okay.
Probably. So you find one that's comfortable being on camera, someone that can sign for their office space and that can let you into the office space early to light it. And then generally, the cast has no say. I mean, I guess in a world they could care, but most of the time you're just like, you're going to go see a therapist. This is who it is. And they're like, okay, whatever. Like, who cares?
And it's never their prior therapist.
It can be, but it would be acknowledged that it's their therapist on the show. They would
Got
say,
it.
I've been seeing this person for years. This is my blah. And like, you know. As Jax is an example, he very clearly is meeting these people for the first time. And it's like, I'm going to my first therapy appointment. And like Jax and Brittany, their couples counselor, like first time they'd ever met that person. So 99% of the time, it's not their real therapist, but it is a real therapist that practices in the area that they live in. And generally you prep the therapist on what they will be talking about and kind of what you want them to follow up on. So like he cheated on his girlfriend, so they have trust issues that we want to follow up on. He is a narcissist. I'm not talking about anyone specifically. I could be talking about anyone. So you prep the therapist on kind of what you want them to go over and do the same thing, but the cast of like, you're going to this appointment, talk about blah, 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 and you kind of let them go. It's generally abbreviated, I would say. It's not mm-hmm. like you don't let the therapist just run a normal appointment and like do 30 minutes of backstory because like, that can be boring.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Okay.
So you're guiding them to the story points that they want. That's therapy in reality TV.
Is that the same as like when the women on Real Housewives go to like get like that machine that makes it look like you've done 1,000 more crunches? Like when they go to like the random like cosmetic offices, those are like just totally like the producers being like, you're going to do this.
Yes. Or and when they go to like a consultation for a doctor appointment or a fertility appointment, like it's the same process where, yeah, they are real doctors. They do really practice it, but it's generally not their idea or something they would be doing.
In some ways, like if you're the star, you're kind of getting like a free consultation out of this.
Oh, 100%. Like when Kristen and Luke went to the fertility doctor on the Valley, I was like, that was an expensive appointment that I bet.
Same with like Lindsay on Summer House. Like I'm thinking of some of those appointments. I'm like, those are free, good consultation.
Totally. Free laser hair removal, yeah. Free tattoo removal, oh. Like all that stuff. Yeah.
I'd want all my personal scenes to be that kind of stuff.
No, I'm like, actually, I'm only going to get beauty treatments for this season. Sorry, guys.
You quickly touched on this driving scenes where you put a walkie-talkie in the car so that you can communicate because there's always a car driving behind where the filming's happening.
Yeah, so you can't hear, you have to be within a certain physical range of the audio bag in order to be able to hear it in your ear. So if you're just shooting B-roll of them driving around, which isn't common, but you're most of the time they're driving and you're wanting them to talk about story beats, so you have to be listening and making sure that they're getting it. You're following them in a production car so that you can hear the mics, basically.
Got it.
So you generally can't see the cameras. So you check because they're a little like, I'm sure they have things that are better than the GoPros now, but they're... Yeah.
Right.
Are they better?
I don't know.
Anyway.
I don't know.
they're tiny little cameras. You can't see those angles when they first get in to make sure, like, you know, you can't see the other camera in the shot, etc. And then you're following them while they chat. And then you're sometimes using the walkie to say, can you guys look back and talk about the plan again? And sometimes there is a producer laying in the backseat of the car, which is another fun.
That's hilarious. Thing. That's hilarious.
Yeah. And I was rewatching Unreal and like unpacking it on the podcast. And that is one of the opening scenes, is that there's the producers laying on the floor of the limo of the Bachelor. And I'm like, totally been, we've all laid on floors,
yeah.
You know?
Well, and I guess like on the Salt Lake City Sprinter vans, there's always, you can always see like one producer sort of sitting like sort of towards the door, like closer to the driver. I do know of one scene on last season where a producer was laying in the Sprinter van.
How does PwC take your company to the leading edge? They bring the sharpest minds in tech to your team, so you can bring the ideas that will transform your business. They're passionate about your industry, so you can walk into any room with every advantage. And they're with you every step of the way, so you can know you're headed in the right direction. PwC builds for what's next, so you can get there now. Get started at pwc.com/us/leading edge.
They always tell you there's a catch, a compromise, an asterisk. Terms apply. See store for details. Maybe less than advertised. May vary by mood. Probably. Sprite Zero Sugar? It's different. It's the lemon lime flavored refreshment you want with zero sugar. So, no fast voice? No caveats. Just refreshment. This is Sprite Zero Sugar. Obey your thirst.
On December 12th, Disney Plus invites you to go behind the scenes with Taylor Swift in an exclusive 6-episode docuseries.
I wanted to give something to the fans that they didn't expect.
The only thing left is to close the book.
The end of an era. And don't miss Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour, the final show, featuring for the first time the Tortured Poets Department. Streaming December 12th, only on Disney Plus.
You mentioned that when kids are on camera, they're generally getting some sort of appearance fee if the cast is smart about that.
Yes. I think that's really important. Minors in general is something.
It's work.
Yeah, it's work. And minors in general is something that always made me like quite uncomfortable on these ensemble follow shows, because I'm just like, oh, it's just like, yeah, I think the line of exploitation and documentation is very
sure.
Blurry with
well, at least
kids.
They're getting some money.
Yes. So they're getting paid. It's generally not a full, you know, appearance release fee, but it's, you know, $1,000 maybe an episode. And then often there is also a teacher on set. It's called a studio teacher. Their actual role is to, you know, put the kids in school if they're being taken out of school to be on set. But in these cases, it's really like the welfare of the kid. Like if you're shooting with newborns, there's very specific rules about how long they can be under lights for and how long you can film with them. Like, so they're like an additional layer of like protection for the kid. And they're there to advocate for the kids, like, welfare versus productions, which is a nice check to have on sets.
Absolutely.
Like that,
that's nice to hear. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You talk a lot about locations, and I feel like that's probably a two-pronged thing. One is like apartments and houses where they actually live, and then there's obviously restaurants and airports and all those different things. Talk to me about the location aspect of it all quickly. Like, not, I think it's probably kind of like a not the most exciting thing to know about, but like it is something to know about.
Yeah, it is. It is the hardest job, in my opinion. I did like 2 seasons of it, and I was like, "Get me out of here! This is it's so hard." I honestly think it's the hardest thing to do, because, especially in LA, restaurants don't want to mess with you because they know what a pain in the butt you are. Like production, we come for 3 hours, we take up 4 tables with all of our crap. We want you to turn the music off. We're just very annoying. And like restaurants in LA have gotten savvy to that, where they know what they've all been filmed at now. And they're like, absolutely not. Get out of here. You're going to piss off my patrons way more than any business you're going to bring me. On the other hand, sometimes there is the off chance where, you know, something like The Quiet Woman on Housewives. When I watched OC, I really should come back to it. But like that
it became
restaurant
iconic.
Became such a, you know, a huge like tourist destination for people to go see where this famous thing happened. And so there, but like that's, you know, out of the 500 scenes they shot in restaurants, that's the one where it's paid off.
Yeah. Well, I think about on Beverly Hills last season, Jennifer Tilly hosted like a lunch at this like Caviar Caspia. And the amount of times they mentioned it by name, showed the sign. I was like, oh my God, like this is definitely the only reason why they were able to film there is because they had to like get like X amount of mentions on the show.
Yes, which is a trade out, which you will, anytime someone mentions something's full name, you should go, what's going on there? And that is they've done a discounted rate or something free. And, you know, every hotel, you will see it. They don't just say, welcome to Maui. They say, welcome to the Hyatt Regency and Spa in Maui. And you're like, who? No one talks like that.
And like, do you think they've gotten like a room discount to be there?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So you're generally getting free or heavily discounted rooms for the cast and the crew. So a big thing that can dictate where those cast trips are held is these trade outs that you're able to negotiate. So like the trade out or the segment producer for that season will be in contact with like three different hotels on three different locations. And it can really just be a budget thing of like, I only have this much to spend. This hotel is going to give us all of our rooms free plus an all cast dinner, you know, so we're going there.
Have you done cast trips before?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are those just as wild and crazy as they seem?
Crazy.
Like just like an like all like kind of always on kind of situation?
Always on, always, and it's I've done a couple like on location. I was at a hotel for 6 weeks in Puerto Rico, which was crazy. And also I've done one to Mexico and then some other local ones, but it is challenging. But on the other hand, you shoot for 5 days, you get 2 to 3 episodes, which is a
That's
lot.
Good.
Like, you know, that can take you quite a bit of time if you're just in the field. So
yeah,
it is worth it, but it's hard.
A question I have, because sometimes, obviously there's a finite amount of cameras and crew members.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes on these shows, you'll see kind of self-shot stuff like iPhone or just it's clearly like it's not as like high production value. So like there weren't enough crew that day or... What's the explanation of that usually?
Astute pickup, because honestly, sometimes stuff happens and I'm like, does no one notice that this is shot on like a terrible camera? Like I hope that people do, but maybe no one does. I think in that situation, so there's a couple things that can happen. Back to location, sometimes the location will say, no filming, sorry. This can happen when someone's delivering a baby very commonly, like the hospital will not allow you in, but will they allow in, you know, a producer with a family? You know, family footage
camera. Taking home footage, right? Right. Oh, interesting.
Yes, okay. They sure would. So that is most often what's happening is like the location won't sign or the crew's on a break or they don't think it's really going to be that big of a deal, but they kind of want to capture it anyway, just in case you'll like send a producer with a handy cam, like a little camera.
I think about Summer House early seasons and they still can't film at Surf Lodge. That's like there was like the hot spot in Montauk that like everyone, they clearly would go out there and they weren't allowed to film there. And so they sometimes have like iPhone footage of it, but like it was so clear they weren't allowed to have cameras there.
Exactly.
And then the other thing I think about on the flip side, and maybe you can speak to this about like you're on a cast trip or maybe you're even just at a group event or something and something happens later. Cameras are down. I think about Beverly Hills, the famous Kathy Hilton, Lisa Rinna example where you'd think that Rinna would be the type of person that would maybe secretly be filming or recording or something, but she didn't do that, much to everybody's dismay, because nothing can be proved about what Kathy did or did not say that night. As a crew member, for somebody on production, what's that feeling like when you find out that like, oh my God, this happened and we weren't there?
Worst nightmare, terror, dread, especially if you've made the call to send the crew home. Because, you know, sometimes you're like, we just have to ride this out and they're not doing anything right now. But I think you are making that call live as a producer with, you know, you and the EPs are like, I think something's boiling. I think something's going to happen. Or, you know, we can't afford the 2 hours of OT. They're clearly done for the night. We just got to cut it and go. And it is, you never know. And that is the part that is real, is that you're making those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hoping that something doesn't blow up in your absence.
Oh my God. okay, well, I have like about a million other questions for you, but we're running out of time. The last thing I want to ask you though, before we end here, is like, you're out of reality TV. You work in different kind of production now. And obviously like in the past, you know, several years, it's been this big conversation around reality TV and how ethical it is, how exploitative it is. And you talked about a little bit today how like it's a little bit mutually beneficial. And, you know, there are moments where you feel like you kind of feel like you're using somebody, but like, are they also using me? How do you feel about that whole conversation and like just, I guess, like the morality of reality TV? Like, do you have issues with this, somebody who was in it?
I personally don't see issue with it if they are consenting adults. And I think that is why shows with kids can be so tricky. Like a something like a Teen Mom would have made me very uncomfortable to work on. And I think that is that's a hard thing that you have to make a call on. But I think there's morality in every career choice that you make, you know? Mm-hmm. Are we all doing 100% things that are only in other people's interests all the time? Probably not. But I do think overall, like, the producers I have worked with are all incredibly hardworking, so smart, care so much, want to make the best show possible, care about the cast well-being, and want what's best for the show. And in a lot of cases for the cast, they want the show to continue on. And that is the producer's job, is to craft the episode well enough so that they get to come back and they get to do another season.
That's a great answer. And that's kind of, I like hearing that, because I've kind of felt the same way. Like, you're signing up for this, and obviously, you know, you're letting up control, and that is definitely difficult. But like, as you said, there's probably some people who take advantage of that and push it too far. But it seems like most people that I've always met are like great people like yourself, who just like wanted, are interested in production and like telling the stories and like the people. And so that's good to hear.
Yeah. And I mean, these people are also like giving, like, you lose your life to the show. You are gone at least 12 hours a day for 8 weeks at a time. And you are like living and breathing with these people for so long. And like those people have families and have friends and miss birthday parties and weddings to, you know, come to your all cast event and make sure it's great. And that is another big part of production that I think can really easily get glossed over, is
absolutely
how hard these people are working to make a show.
Yeah. Well, we thank everyone for their service. Anybody listening, anybody who has done this, it's like, you know, it's been, it keeps me going, obviously. Well, Liv, we might have to do this again. We might have to do a part two at some point in the future.
I would love that.
You have a new podcast. Tell us when and where people can listen to it, what they can expect, maybe more of what we talked about today. Do the plugs before we sign off here.
Thank you. That's so sweet. Yeah, my podcast is called It's Liv On Air. Anywhere you can find a podcast, you should be able to find it. We are doing rewatches of Unreal. So if you ever wondered, is Unreal really like it is in reality TV? I'm breaking down episode by episode. And then I'm also doing deep dives on currently on shows and telling you some more behind the scenes things. So give it a listen.
Juicy stuff, you guys. You have to go listen to It's Liv On Air, honestly, and follow her on TikTok. Really some... a constant stream of stuff that I find interesting. And I'm sure if you're listening to Gabbing with Gib, you are also interested in this. So Liv, thanks so much for doing this. I appreciate you being flexible with your time. And we'll have to do this again soon.
Thank you so much. You're a true delight.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.